Oh, hey there, Ghostbuster fans. Welcome to Why We Bust, a weekly show where we look at the Ghostbuster cosplay community across the world and we ask individuals the burning question that's on everybody's mind. Why do you do what you do? This show is powered by Memoriam Development, the Windy City Ghostbusters, and viewers like you. So turn that pack off, shut your trap, and take the night off and enjoy Why We Bust.
Hello, everyone. The Windy City Ghostbusters are excited to present the preeminent show focused on the charitable side of ghostbusting. We're meeting the incredible people from all over the world that dress like khaki-covered exterminators lugging around 30-pound light-up backpacks, all in the name of putting smiles on faces and helping people. You know, we're here to find out what makes them tick and understand, you know, their take on why we bust. I am your host, Patrick Calvert. Joining me is the central nervous system of our show, ensuring we're broadcasting loud and clear over Twitch, maybe Facebook and YouTube.
No. Facebook. YouTube, yeah. And Twitch currently, because okay. Facebook's dumb.
I agree with you there. As well as all the other major podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher. It's James Norman. James,
hello. Welcome. What's going on?
I'm just, I'm glad to be back. It's weird when the permanent host is also the fill-in host, but I'm filling in for Bob, who, Bob Anderson is, off doing an actual paranormal investigation, and, we needed a fill-in, and I said, oh, I have the day off of work because of the holiday, so if I get a little bit of stuff done early in the day, I could fill in for my fill-in and come back. So I'm here. Don't get used to it. I feel like at any moment my wife can burst through the door behind me and tell me we have to go to the hospital, at which point, John, I can switch the show to my phone. And
I think at that point we can just call the show.
So I think that might be fast.
Which, you know, would be the most exciting thing to happen on the show. So we're on baby countdown in our house. I was saying before the show, my wife keeps talking about little things that happen to be symptoms of, you know, starting the labor process, and we're having arguments going back and forth. Where I try to remind her, I think you might be ready to have this baby, and she's adamant that she's not. So we'll see. We're really bad at betting. We've made the bet but didn't set any stakes to it. So I've bet that the baby's coming before the actual due date, which is a week from today. She thinks it'll wait till the due date, but I don't think we're going to get there.
Is there a pool going? Can we get in on that?
If there is, no one's alerted me to it.
Okay.
No, we're, like I said, we're bad at betting. We're bad at stakes. But we're, you know, we're kind of in that mode where, you know, I know my life is going to totally get turned upside down here at any moment. So every night that I get to sleep through the night now is a little present. But anyhow, enough of that. But I'm back, and we have an exciting guest this Monday. I don't know what's going on, but John Peacock from the Western Kentucky Ghostbusters. John, you've your name has been there on the screen this whole time, and your name is in the title of the podcast, but welcome surprise. To the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
We're excited to have you. The Western Kentucky Ghostbusters has been kind of a staple in the ghostbusting community for a while, and I don't think we've had anyone from your group on the show yet. So welcome. We're really excited to have you here. And real quick before we kind of dive in, you know, to the meat of the show, if anyone is interested in following, you know, in John's footsteps and being a host or a guest on the show, reach out to Why We Bust on Facebook, or shoot, you know, James or myself a direct message on Facebook or Instagram. Let us know that you'd like to be part of the show. We've got surprisingly a pretty organized list of guests. So we'd love to have you join it, and we'll let you know everything that you need to come on. So yeah, that's my plug, just to make sure that the show lives on long. And with Bob being on an actual paranormal investigation, he's not doing a video or a broadcast tonight, is he? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know.
So he hasn't said anything to us, so we're just not going to throw it to him. But normally you could follow Bob after dark. You can catch Bob broadcasting something spooky, something entertaining over at the Bob After Dark channel on Twitch.
Is he ever not on the road? Every time I talk to him, he either just got back from something or he's about to go to something.
He is the James Brown of the paranormal world. He is the hardest working man in the paranormal world.
Can't argue with that.
And yeah. I was telling my wife, I was like, well, Bob is he's always filling in, he's always doing something, and she's like, that sounds like a Bob problem, not a you problem. And it's like, the man doesn't stop. And I just want to shout out to Bob. I appreciate him filling in with us. He's always just loading up his plate with more. But anyhow, so Bob After Dark normally follows us. Probably not tonight. He's off doing something spooky. But typically be on the lookout for that. That's our plug to Bob. But, this started as a week, John, I'll do this week in Ghostbusters history bit. Sweet. On our show. And I just want to say hello to everyone that's joined us in the chat. I'm horrible. Apologies now to anyone in the chat. I'm horrible at reading chats. I cannot multitask and read and talk and think at the same time. So I'll leave that up to James. So if anybody's saying anything and I'm not getting to it, blame James. Don't blame me.
That's fine. I'm putting them up on the video feed. So.
Oh, do you do that? Do you choose what goes up on the feed? I just thought that was some bot that throws things up every once in a while. But
yes, it's me. I'm a bot.
Oh. I have no idea how what I do works at all. I just show up with a microphone and get going. Well, thank you, James. Another thing that I can thank you for doing.
But anyways, that the 270 show, yes, please don't give Bob ideas. Thanks.
We don't need more. He's running out of organs that he can lose, so we don't need to pile on the stress. John, I was saying, we do this week in Ghostbusters history. Gives a little bit of time for extra folks to kind of join the broadcast before we get to the meat and potatoes with you. And I swear, I thought we were going to have maybe two things this week, but while there wasn't anything huge, there was a ton of news for this cycle. And real quick, on February 12th, 2022, so that would have been last week, but we didn't have a This Week in Ghostbusters History. It was the anniversary of Ivan Reitman's passing, so I did want to make sure that we gave Ivan his due here on our show. And that was such a devastating blow. But yes, to Ivan. And it's hard to believe, Ivan Reitman, Ghostbusters wouldn't be what it is without his style.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah. So, you can have Dan Aykroyd and all those guys together, but it was that palette from Ivan Reitman that really set the tone. So Ivan Reitman passed away on the 12th of February, 2022. Don't want to linger on it, but want to make sure we at least acknowledged it here. But other things that happened this week in Ghostbusters history: February 15th, 1991. Nothing But Trouble with Dan Aykroyd directing and Chevy Chase starring. And that one, I feel like for the majority of that movie's life, it has been marked as one of the lowest points of cinematic history. But now I'm starting to hear that there's a bit of a cult following and people are coming around to the weirdness of it. It's on my list. Movie. I haven't seen it. Have you seen it, James?
Oh, yes. I own it. But that's one of those movies that used to be on HBO consistently when I was
all the time. Yeah.
Really?
And I love that movie. I absolutely love that movie because it's super, it's just unadulterated Dan Aykroyd id.
That's the beauty of stumbling across stuff on HBO when you were like too young to see it. I didn't know it was supposed to be bad and terrible and like, you know, a low point in everyone's career. I was just like, wow, it's this really weird movie Dan Aykroyd directed. That's cool. It was years later when I was like, oh, this is a bad movie? I missed that memo.
I love that you guys had Nothing But Trouble as your weird Dan Aykroyd HBO movie. I somehow missed that one, but for some reason, I seem to always be catching Dan Aykroyd and Rosie O'Donnell's, was it Exit
Another
to Eden?
Another stakeout? Oh.
Where they like went to some like sex retreat somewhere as private investigators.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Aren't they in BDSM gear at one point?
Yes, yes.
That image is still tattooed. Yeah, I wish I could get rid of that.
Mine as well. But so I don't remember Nothing But Trouble being around, but for some reason Exit to Eden constantly was on, and I, you know, Dan Aykroyd, I gotta watch it. Nothing But Trouble, that is on my list, James. I feel like every week is another I haven't seen it, but I'm going to. I just am bad at seeing new movies. So I'll get there.
Or 30 something year old movies, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is I have a huge list of, my wife and I are really into like movies from the golden era of Hollywood and the you know, the 30s, 40s, 50s. So we love old timey Hollywood movies. So we're you know, if it's between Nothing But Trouble or Casablanca, it's a hard fight sometimes to win that one out. But so February 16th, 2020, Deadline reported that Rick Moranis was going to make his comeback in the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids TV series called Shrunk. And ultimately that did get shelved by the pandemic. But do you guys recall that news?
Vaguely, because I remember just being, okay, he'll come back for that. He won't come back for Ghostbusters. Okay, fine. Whatever.
Well, you know, it's...
Because he did there was that weird behind-the-scenes show Disney Plus had for a while, where it was like going through the Disney vault and pulling out all the props.
Mm-hmm.
Shrinking Ray from the first movie, and he shows up at the end of that. So I remember thinking, oh, Disney got him to
Did
come
he show
stuff.
Up at the end of that? I don't think I ever finished that episode. I think I came about three quarters way through.
He's not
the
in much of it, but yeah, the last like 10 minutes, when they're done with the restoration. Yeah.
He was in that Ryan Reynolds cell phone commercial.
Oh yeah.
So he'll do stuff, but also, you know, I don't know how much he wants to travel either. That's because fair. To go back and do Frozen Empire, he would have had to go live over in England for a little while too. So I don't know. He is a man of mystery at this point, and good for him that he can afford to kind of just choose what he feels like doing.
Just let us love you, Rick. Just let us love you and shower you with our autograph money.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
he did that once and never again.
Oh.
Well, it's, if they wanted to revive that, I would watch it, but I don't think I would watch it unless Rick Moranis was still attached to it. February 17th, 2014. Now, I'm not a huge Lego guy. James or John, are you Lego collectors, builders?
It's too expensive.
It is expensive. And
depends on what it is.
Well, the Lego Ecto-1 was the kind of the first images of that were released.
That's back there.
Oh, is it? Yes, okay, there it is.
Up over there. That I do have.
This week in Ghostbusters history, the first kind of images, teasers were released for that. I believe this is kind of around the time that the New York Toy Fair goes on. So that might have been kind of what that was tied to. Also on February 17th, I'm looking, there are about five things. So I'll go try and run through them really quick. But February 17th, 2015, Bill Murray cameos on Parks and Rec as the long mentioned, never seen until the very end, Mayor Walter Gunderson. I think that was the last episode of Parks and Rec where he plays the dead mayor in a funeral video. But that was That was a high point of that episode, seeing Bill Murray come through. And let's see, what else here? 2017, February 17th, Ghost Corps teased that they found deleted Ghostbuster scenes in Ivan Reitman's personal storage. That included the honeymooning couple in the Sedgwick and the Fort Detmering. Detmering?
I don't know to correct.
I believe it's Detmering.
Detmering. So Ray and Winston, kind of the only bit that we Ghostbusters fans really knew of that was the ghost visiting Ray in the middle of the night that was used during the montage as a dream. But the kind of the that whole scene was a bit of a holy grail type of deleted scene for Ghostbuster fans. And I think that that came out in that big anniversary edition it box did. Set, yep. Right? And I missed that. I didn't realize they were only going to put it out for that one run and never, never again.
So far.
But yeah, well, yeah. Oh, yeah. If there's money to be made,
there's a whole new movie to cram into a box set now.
That's true. So. That's true. So, so that was February 17th, 2017. And then February 17th, 2023, I have not seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. But Bill Murray was apparently in that movie. Have you guys seen that? I'm not a Marvel person.
It's him hating on Michelle Pfeiffer a lot.
Yeah, it's a train wreck.
Okay. So not a go out of your way to see it type moment.
It's really not.
It's a little cringy. All right. Well, that happened February 17th, 2023. February 18th, 2018. This is one I never got in on these, but I constantly saw them and I wish that I had, you know, room to have a bigger collection for this kind of stuff. But Diamond Select Toys revealed their real Ghostbuster figures at the New York Toy Fair, along with some Ghostbuster 2 figures, like the possessed Ray in his slime blower, and the main four in their Santa hats and gray suits, along with Janosch Poha and Baby Oscar. All those figures were premiered at the New York Toy Fair. Did you guys collect any of those Diamond Select figures?
I bought the real Ghostbusters ones.
Okay, did you? Those look pretty cool.
I went
cool.
all in on the Maddie stuff. So when Diamond Select came out, I was like, this is cool, but like I already have all of that in
right.
boxes at that point. It wasn't even on display anymore. So it was kind of hard to pull the trigger on all of it again. Mm-hmm. But when they hit RGB stuff, I was like, well, I don't have that.
What was the price point for those RGB figures? Because all I see now are the $200 figures.
Yeah, other nuts from, now, yeah. I should have sat on those, yeah.
Was it Mondo? But February 19th, 2016. You know, in 2016, we're gearing up for the Paul Feig Ghostbusters, and the Ecto Cooler was confirmed as returning February 19th, 2016. And I didn't realize how it officially was confirmed that it came out, but apparently a test can of Hi-C hit eBay that was subsequently confirmed as being authentic. And so it had not been any actual press releases, but somebody put up the test art on a can of Hi-C on eBay, and that trickled through. And
who won the auction?
That I don't know. That was not in the Ghostbusters. Maybe. But that information was not on the Ghostbusters news website. But I thought that was an interesting way of news breaking there. And whoever had that can that used to work at Coca-Cola, I hope they earned a year's salary on that eBay sale. And then we've got February 21st, 2023. You know, Ernie Hudson making the news, talking about some of the difficulties. I feel like every time Ernie Hudson has to go out and do press, we people want to dive into kind of his experience not being as included as the main three. And I don't think that's Ernie's fault as much as people constantly bringing it up to him. But I think for us fans, there was kind of a constant, why is Winston not on not on the DVD? Why is Winston not on the poster? But understandable for the marketers who are saying this is a Saturday Night Live driven cast, and we want to just feature, you know, the recognizable names here. That being said, I don't know if Harold Ramis was necessarily a household name or face at that point. I know he had directed, but he wasn't, you know, he was not in front of the camera on SCTV or SNL. So, you know, there's a little bit of a, hey, if Harold could be on there, why Stripes, isn't...
I think was before Ghostbusters,
that's
right?
True. So that's true. You're right.
And he was before the camera in SCTV, just not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. Okay. So he was up still. I'm not saying he wasn't a big name, but if you were sure. Going on the, my reasoning until I started talking it through was the SNL link. But so it is one of those things as far as, you know, Ghostbuster fans go, it's a foursome. Winston needs to be there. And we're glad that they have taken steps to make sure he's being included much more regularly now than he was back then. But even, you know, look at the poster, you know, behind you, John. It's just the three on that on that main one there. But
well, what I always found really weird and frustrating is it seemed like for a while they would go out of their way to remove Winston from stuff. Like, true. This is going way back. But if you remember the DVD, I think the first DVDs that came out, the Ghostbusters 2 artwork was all Photoshop recycled artwork from Ghostbusters 1.
Mm-hmm.
So all they had to do was take the poster and slap it on the cover of a DVD, and there's Winston. But we used art from Ghostbusters 1.
Right.
Yeah, stuff like that was just confused me to no end.
It's right. And because when the movie came out, I mean, the poster you have behind you was the main poster that was up in theaters. But I remember, you know, on the kids picture book that came out, and I had the soundtrack on vinyl in 1989, but that was all four guys in their gray suits with Ernie Hudson included there. So yeah, it can't go back and change it. I'm glad that Ernie, you know, is speaking up for himself on there, and hopefully it's made the news enough that he's not going to constantly be asked those questions every time he goes around and does press. But it is, you know, it did really hit the news hard as we were getting ready for Frozen Empire coming out here. So, and then last thing real quick here, February 22nd, 2008, Be Kind Rewind with Jack Black and Mos Def came out, which, if you're a Ghostbusters fan, it was so wonderful to get a little recognition as Jack Black and Mos Def went through and recreated Ghostbusters for a few minutes in that
theme
movie.
Song too.
That's right, and that's the only part of the movie I've ever seen. that was one just kind of 2008. That was right before the video game came out. I think so. It was still one of those.
I think it had been announced, but it wasn't out yet. I think it came out in 2009, but it got delayed significantly because it lost publishers.
Right, right.
But while there was kind of development. But yeah,
it was that like 18-month stretch where it was like, oh my gosh, there's Ghostbusters stuff out there. Ghostbusters is being recognized this movie, and then Maddie Collector stuff is starting to come out. And
the end of the dark times.
Right. So anyhow, that I saw that and I had to throw it in as it was a big deal for Ghostbusters. And anybody that was a kid and a Ghostbusters fan knows the feeling of running around making sounds, pretending to shoot your proton pack. But anyhow, that's it for the news. So I really was struggling for the first 15, 16 years after Ghostbusters to find things coming out. But then we really... you know, get to the mid-teens, a lot of stuff started to happen there. So anyhow, thank you everybody for diving into this week in Ghostbusters history. And that brings us to our main event. And John, we've been chatting a little bit here, but now's the time to learn a little bit more about you, about the Western Kentucky Ghostbusters. And, you know, I got to just, again, thank you for coming in here and just peek behind the curtain to those watching and listening. We had a last second you know, back out of a guest this week, and John was kind enough to jump the line and fill in. And so we appreciate you doing that and being here with us. And, you know, this is my first time talking to you, John. You know, what is your history with Ghostbusters?
First of all, again, thank you for having me. Sure. As far as history, I mean, my story is kind of the same as probably most of us. I discovered it through the cartoon first. I had a VHS copy of the movie that wasn't an official VHS. It was our neighbor had Showtime or something and taped it for me. But they hit pause on certain parts of the film. I didn't see the uncut Ghostbusters until I was in high school and bought it on DVD. And remember thinking, wow, is this a director's cut? I don't remember any of this stuff. But I also, it was weird because I saw the cartoon first. So I thought the movie was the origin to the cartoon. I didn't realize the misconnect there. But it was just one of those things I latched onto as a kid. I'm not really sure why I grabbed onto it so hard, especially, you know, I was born in 84, so I had no lack of options for cartoon shows when I was a kid. Turtles was huge. I liked Turtles. Batman was big. I liked Batman, but nothing hit the way Ghostbusters did. My friends were all, you know, would want to play Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers, and I was like, yeah, hey, you guys want to play Ghostbusters again? No? Okay. I'll be the Blue Ranger. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. I was also kind of forced out by my friends moving away from Ghostbusters. I was never quite ready to hang up the proton pack, but it was I was 83 and okay. Norm, you're in that era as well, correct? Are you 85, 86? Where are you?
79.
Oh geez. Are you dyeing your beard?
No.
Jeez, look at this thing. Look at this
thing. It's not the years, it's the mileage.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be. But so I was 83, and nothing was bigger in my world than the real Ghostbusters going on there. And I James, I don't know if you experienced the same thing, but John, I also felt like I watched the movie for the first time when I got the official copy in high school, because I had the TV edit as well, so the curse words were out. The fort scene with Ray was not in there, so there's a lot to be found, you know, once the official movie came in. And so we hit that dead period there for a little while in the 90s, where, you know, yeah, kids are moving away. Ninja Turtles comes in, Power Rangers comes in. 89 was,
you couldn't get away from Batman.
That was a thing. I wonder how much more juice would have been in Ghostbusters 2 had Batman not been out. How many more kids?
I think
would
they
have...
came out, if I remember correctly, they came out within a few weeks of each other.
Yeah.
I think they both came out in June, I think. I could be wrong. But it was pretty close to each other. And Last Crusade, same summer. Like Ghostbusters 2 had stiff competition.
Well, yeah, that was quite a time. But you know, Batman, more so than Last Crusade, as far as what was occupying kids, you know, toy lists. But there were some cool Batman toys and the Batman cereal, which wasn't good, but I remember needing to have it.
You had the weird little cookie cutter thing on the box. You had to have that.
That's true. So we go through that lull there. What passions are you moving into, and what brings you back to Ghostbusters? Or were you just a weird kid that held that torch the entire time?
It never fully went away. You know, I the first poster I ever put on my wall was a Ghostbuster poster. Anytime a new physical media format came out, Ghostbusters was the first thing I bought. You know, anytime Target put a t-shirt out, I went to go buy it. You know, it's we call it the Dark Ages because there just wasn't much for us to support. Mm-hmm. But I never quit loving Ghostbusters. But, you know, I became a huge movie nerd. And became a drama geek in high school, and that took a time and attention. But oddly enough, my mom as a kid she's an amazing seamstress, but she used to make all my costumes for Halloween. And the poor woman could make a Ghostbusters jumpsuit from memory at one point because I kept outgrowing flight suits that she would make for me.
Were you going with the khakis or were you going with the real Ghostbusters?
I did have khaki mostly. I did have, when Ghostbusters 2 came out, I had a black suit because I had to have the new suit.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gap when you know, I started doing other stuff for Halloween costumes eventually, but circle around to sophomore year of high school. My school drama department put on a play called The Uninvited, which is a haunted house ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
So as a kind of jokey prank for opening night of that, I came dressed up as a Ghostbuster, but I didn't have a jumpsuit or a flight suit at that point because I had long outgrown the one I had.
Sure.
So in a weekend, I came to Mom Friday. The play opened like for students on that Monday. It's like, Mom, I need a Ghostbuster suit. So my poor mom is out there trying to expand a pattern that's designed to fit like a 10-year-old to fit a 17-year-old. Right. But then actually, oddly enough, I bring that up to say how the whole Western Kentucky Ghostbusters thing got started. Senior year of high school, my mom makes me a new Ghostbuster suit. I show up to the premiere with my Kenner backpack on because we didn't have any other gear at that point. Everyone got a big laugh. I took a picture with the girl who was dressed up like a ghost.
Sure.
Fast forward to freshman year of college at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green. Go Hilltoppers. I had a teacher who we had class on Halloween that year. This was 2003. And if you came to class, because we had class on Halloween, if you came in a costume, you get extra credit. And this was the kind of teacher where you needed every bit of extra credit you could muster. Sure. So I happened to have that Ghostbusters handmade from scratch Ghostbusters suit in my closet at home, had my mom mail it to me. And I walk into class on Halloween and everyone kind of looks at me, does a double take and looks to this kid sitting in the corner, who's also in a full-on Ghostbusters jumpsuit. We'd been in class the full semester. I'd never seen this kid. We never talked to each other. But that day, I sat down and was like, hey, so we should probably be friends. And that was Chris Flanagan, who was one of the original three Western Kentucky Ghostbusters. And that same Halloween, the two of us walking to go get lunch that day, we kept hearing about this other Ghostbuster somewhere on campus.
Mm.
Couldn't find him. That ended up being Ryan Kemp. We did eventually find him, obviously. But that's kind of what got the whole Western Kentucky thing going is that one random, hey, it'd be a funny prank opening night of a high school play snowballed into. Now, if I hadn't showed up in class that day dressed as a Ghostbuster, I might not be here talking about this today. So
that's very cool. And it is, you know, I am so glad for everyone that's able to just get their, you know, get their flight suits off Amazon now, or even, you know, if like me, I wanted that gray suit so bad for 30 years. So when Magnolia put out their, you know, their flight suits,
yeah,
I gotta get that. I have to get the gray. But you know, the effort that went into being a Ghostbuster for costume or cosplay, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago was, you know, such a passion project for everybody. So were you were at the ground level, you know, starting the Western Kentucky Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
Like, how does that start and how do you organize yourselves beyond just getting together and happening, you know, you all just happen to have flight suits?
Organize is a strong word. herding cats is a more accurate description.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so it started with the three of us, myself, Kemp, and Flanagan on campus at WKU. Kemp drew our logo on scratch paper, which we've cleaned up. But it was literally just a, hey, we should hang out and do this. And it started there on campus. We didn't really do a whole lot except, you know, we'd dress up on Halloween and hang out. Occasionally we'd go to Halloween parties or something, but we didn't really do a whole lot. It was actually after we all graduated. We were kind of at a tipping point. Like, I was ready to hang it up. And like, well, that was
a
fun thing.
You all have packs at this point? What was going on for proton packs here?
So Kemp had one that was made out of, if you remember the old Radio Shack project box kit.
Okay.
And not kit, but like plans. It was a bunch of different sized project box from Radio Shack.
Yes.
On a motherboard of like plywood. I had one I bought off someone on eBay that they had carved out of a block of wood with a vacuum-form cyclotron. So it weighed 30 pounds, but it was all the top of the pack.
Right.
The bottom weighed nothing, so it killed your shoulders. And it had no wand. Okay. So for at least a year, year and a half, I had a lightsaber as my wand. And I think Flanagan at that point was building one vacuum form. Shells were the big thing at that point. This was like 2003 through 2004. If you weren't crafty enough to make the Paranorm plans, you would luck out and get someone who could vacuum form them for you. So he had a really nice light pack. That was the two shells separately put together.
Yeah, I remember that vacuum form. If there was a lot of like, you could just do this yourself, like, which sounds crazy now, but I remember really wanting to make Stormtrooper armor.
Yeah.
And there being the whole, well, here's how you create your own vacuum form. I'm like, this is very doable. I can do this in my parents' garage.
Some kids these days and their 3D printers.
Right.
We had gear. It wasn't particularly great. It was all kitbashed, all thrown together, handmade stuff.
And nobody cared. Nobody, other than you guys, nobody noticed or probably cared.
We had lights, and that's all people noticed. Oh my god, it lights up! Yeah, right. It's, yeah.
Therefore, it's real.
Yeah, our first PK meter was a circuit tester on a lint roller handle with a some book lights that if you folded them out, the ends would light up. And people were just like, oh, cool, lights up. They didn't care.
Right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're so spoiled today.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
so you all have something to pass for equipment.
Yes.
At the time. And so let's go back to herding cats.
So
before I derailed you on.
No, it's fine. So like I said, it was kind of we'd all graduated and I moved back to Lexington. We were kind of, the thing was falling apart. Kemp, the heart and soul of the team, he told me, hey, Peacock, you can't give this up until you come and meet the rest of the Ghostbusters. And I was like, what do you mean the rest of the Ghostbusters? What he meant was you have to come to Dragon Con and go to PKE Search. So about 2010, I think, he talked me into coming with him. And let me tell you, the experience, if you've never done it, of being in the Dragon Con parade.
Can you back up and just give a bit of historical context on what that is and the importance of it? Is I know those names. I haven't been to any of them, and like I've been with the group a couple of years, so I'm
sorry,
still learning. I hear these things and they're said in passing, as in, well, everybody knows about.
Yeah, you should all know this, right?
Here, yeah, right. And I just not
GB
along.
Fans message boards, right? Yeah.
Right.
Dragon Con is a giant convention in Atlanta. Technically it's 4 days. I think at this point it's more like 6.5 days,
because
the day you have to get there, to get there early, keeps going further earlier into the week every year. It's I think 6 host hotels now. Basically downtown Atlanta gets taken over by nerds for 4 to 5 days. It's amazing. But within that, the Ghostbuster community, the Alabama Ghostbusters, Georgia Ghostbusters, Louisiana Ghostbusters, I'm sure I'm forgetting some people and I apologize, they put on like a mini con within the con called PKE Search, which is basically just a gathering of ghost heads and Ghostbuster nerds from all over, whether you're a franchise or not. They have events going on parallel to the convention, stuff like scavenger hunts. There was one where you had to build a pack using stuff in your hotel room, and whoever had the coolest pack won a prize. Sure. But the big thing is they do the parade every year. Dragon Con hosts a parade. Where all the different costume groups enter. You see lots of cool like car replicas and stuff in that. And the Ghostbuster group always has a big presence. My first year there, we had, I think, 8 or 9 Ektomobiles and something like 95 Ghostbusters walking down the streets of downtown Atlanta with the crowds cheering. It in my head, it looked just like the scene at the end of Real Ghostbuster episodes. You know, we're doing the Ghostbuster strut down the street.
Confetti.
Yeah, it was just such a surreal, amazing moment. First of all, like, we're not, us three little nerds in Kentucky aren't the only people who were into this. In fact, we should step up our game because these guys really had their stuff together. And it was just such a cool, like, oh, the community really is here. There really are the nerds. I met so many awesome people there that year that I still talk to. But it's that was sort of my my come to Jesus moment for Ghostbusters of, oh, that's what this can be. It's not just us hanging around on campus. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, we really kind of kicked up our game. We started doing conventions here in Kentucky, Lexington and Bowling Green, and not so much Louisville, because there was or is a Louisville Ghostbusters branch. I say was or is because I never quite know if they're still around until they randomly pop up again somewhere. Sure. But we started doing stuff around here. Kemp was the one who found the UK Kentucky Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. As our charity, and started getting us in with them. And that's really where the ball started rolling. I think our first convention was 2011 at Scarefest here in, mm-hmm. in Lexington. And we've been doing that ever since.
That's awesome. And working with Kentucky Children's Hospital that whole time. That's great.
Yeah. They're an awesome group. Even through the pandemic and stuff, we've tried to help them out, and they're always, always happy to have us, the staff. So what we do throughout the year, mm-hmm. When we're at events like conventions, we have a scavenger hunt. It's a ghost hunt game. You make your donation to the kids' hospital. That gets you your pass, which we call a Ghostbusters license. Okay. It's just a list of, we have 10 ghosts hidden around the convention. You get a raffle ticket for playing the game. The more ghosts you find, you can come back and show us and get more raffle tickets.
Oh, very cool.
So it's encouraging you to, you're going to walk around the convention floor and look at stuff anyway. While you're doing that, look for ghosts.
Gotcha.
All that money goes to the Kentucky Children's Hospital. And we collect that throughout the year. Our season is basically March to October. And I say that because October 31st, Halloween, they host a reverse trick-or-treat program where the mm-hmm. kids who are in the hospital and can't go trick-or-treating for Halloween, we go trick-or-treating, we bring it to them. Sure. Various groups, everyone from like the UK basketball team to people like us to just nurses who work on the floor, will put groups together, and you walk around, you do a lap around the hospital, and the kids will stand at their door, and you mm-hmm. hand them candy and whatnot. The parents love seeing us. The staff loves seeing us. About a third of the kids are excited to see us. The other third are very confused.
Hey, wait till that cartoon comes out on Netflix.
Yeah. So. But it's been really fun. It's been, I tell people, if you have any reminder of why we really do what we do, it's that trip. Just seeing kids' faces light up. It's awesome. But that's the condensed sort of version. And throughout those years, we've been lucky and blessed enough to just keep finding more cool, like-minded nerds in our area mm-hmm. That are not just in it to show off their gear, but want to actually do something cool and positive with the hobby. At one point, our roster was like 30-some people. It's dwindled since then, you know, life happens.
Sure.
But it amazes me. When we found our fourth member, I was like, wow, there's four of us. Like it blows me. And you know, as I'm sure you guys have experienced, as the franchise comes back into popular culture again with, you know, new movies and new games and stuff like mm-hmm. that, we've got a ton of people hitting us up to join and come out to events.
Yeah, that was me. That, you know, I was, you know, it was sort of my wife with the once the HasLab pack came out and started occupying prominent space at our home. It's like, what are you going to do with this? It's like, there is a group. I think I can do something worthwhile. And
that's a future problem.
Right. I can have an excuse to leave this out in the general area of the house. But perfect. And that's such a cool story that you guys have. And it's nice to, you know, talk to you who was at the ground floor, and you've just been, you know, growing for so long here. And you know, I want to make sure we have time to talk about Ryan, because I know his name, and I know, you know, folks like, you know, Norm, you know of Ryan, and Bob Anderson knows him. Can you kind of talk to our audience a little bit about Ryan and kind of the legacy that he's left with, you know, with your group?
Yeah, Ryan E. Kemp, the heart and soul of our team, the reason we call ourselves the house that Kemp built. Like I said, I met him in college, and he was just, it's hard to describe him in words. He was a one-of-a-kind human being. He was obsessed with Dan Aykroyd, improv comedy, Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. It felt like the man was born in the wrong era. But he latched on to us nerds over our love of Ghostbusters. I always love to tell people I never met Kemp. Kemp found me. We were in class one day. This was after the whole Halloween wearing our flight suits on campus thing. It was the next semester after that. And I'm sitting in class beginning of that semester. Mm-hmm. And this kid walks into class wearing gray coveralls, a briefcase handcuffed to his wrist, and combat boots. Everyone in class is kind of like, this guy's weird. But anyway, he sits right behind me, and I see him looking at me. Now, keep in mind, this is pre-social media. Facebook isn't even a thing yet. He keeps kind of glancing over at me, and I'm like, oh, God, why is he looking at me? And finally, he leans over and goes, hey, are you John Peacock? To this day, no idea how he knew what I looked like, what mm-hmm. my name. I wasn't wearing a Ghostbuster T-shirt or anything.
Right.
Somehow he knew me. And in that fateful moment, rather than lying, because the teacher was going to take attendance and I was going to get blown anyway, I was like, yeah, I am. So Kemp found me, and he started the whole thing. Like I said, he hand drew our original logo. Before he met us, he was the Western Kentucky Ghostbuster singular. Mm. Until he found some other Ghostbusters to throw that S on there. Mm. To describe Kemp is his life motto was the improv philosophy of yes and. His philosophy in life was take care of everybody else, they'll take care of you. Make mm-hmm. everybody else look good, they'll make you look good. And that was with everything he did. He was incredibly generous. He was also completely unhinged. That was crazy. He would get very narrow-mindedly focused on achieving one goal, and God help him by hook or by crook, that goal would get achieved. Mm-hmm. My favorite Kemp story, I call it the other comic book store story. So we're in Bowling Green. I've only lived in the state of Kentucky for a couple of years at that point. Mm-hmm. The 88 miles per hour Ghostbuster comic had just come out, if you're old enough to remember that. but again, that was in those dark, in that era of anything Ghostbusters knew was awesome. So sure. There's a comic book store in Bowling Green. We go to check it out. They don't have any issues of it. They might have had one, but not two. So Kemp says, hey, do you want to go to the other comic book store? And I was like, yeah, sure. Thinking it's somewhere on the other side of town. We hop into his beat up GMC Jimmy, which that thing had like 800,000 miles before it finally wrecked it. But we drive and we're driving and we're still driving. And it's like 30, 45 minutes. And finally, I'm like, where is the other store? He goes, oh, it's in Tennessee. I have a class to be in. So we drove to Tennessee to the other Great Escape, I think was the name of the store, the other Great Escape in Tennessee. But sure enough, we got another issue of 88 miles per hour Ghostbusters that day. But that was Kemp. Like, if there was something that needed to be done, the rest of the world didn't matter, we're gonna get that done.
Right.
It could be great to see sometimes. He's probably best known for within the community. Every year at the parade for Dragon Con, this man went hard. From the time they announced start to the time the parade ended, he was high-fiving people, shouting to the crowd, hyping people up, using a megaphone, just went hard. And then as soon as the parade route was done, he would just collapse from exhaustion.
Did we steal our microphone idea, Norm, from or our megaphone?
I have no idea, probably. Parades?
Yeah, his enthusiasm was contagious. The man would get, you know, he was very much just like Ray. He would get super excited, like, you know, like a child over stuff, mm-hmm. and it was impossible not to latch onto that. But yeah, he's the one who, like I said, after college, before my come to Jesus moment at Dragon Con, I was ready to kind of hang it up and like, well, that was a fun thing in college, but you know, I should go do adult stuff now. And he was the one who was like, no, like this can be more, this can be bigger, this can be awesome, and we should stick with it. And he was the guy that would foot the bill. Our first table, when we didn't understand that you can just tell cons, hey, we're doing this for charity, can you comp us a table and passes? Mm-hmm. We were idiots and paid for our table and passes.
Well, how are you supposed to know?
Kemp, yeah, but Kemp footed the bill for that.
Wow.
Because he had seemingly endless pockets of money. He's just, I'll say this. Anyone who knew Kemp, if you ask them about Kemp, they will give you a story. Because everybody who ever met Kemp came away with a story about Kemp.
That's great.
Yes, there is the PK Eastridge award named after him. Yeah, it's the Iron Ghostbuster Award. Whoever has the most gear damage or the gear most badly damaged during the parade gets the Ryan E. Kemp Iron Ghostbuster Award.
What's the background there? So was he notorious for going hard with the gear?
When I say the man collapsed after the parade, I mean literally he collapsed after the parade. He was diabetic. And not always the best about checking blood sugar levels.
Gotcha. Okay. I know.
One year he just disappeared during the con, and nobody could find him. And we finally got a call from him like an hour and a half later. Or we heard a Ghostbuster passed out in the hotel lobby, and we went to the hotel to check on him. And the staff was like, yeah, they passed out. We called the ambulance for him. He was in the hospital, cause he collapsed, and he was angry that the staff had cut off his flight suit.
Oh my gosh.
About the flight suit.
Right.
But hours later, when he finally got released, he was supposed to call me. We were going to come pick him up. I'd arranged to get him a ride. Well, his phone was dead because he was playing on his phone the entire time he was at the hospital. So I'm freaking out, trying to call the hospital, the hotel, trying to figure out where he is, where his stuff is, what's going on. I hear a knock at the door, and I should have sent you this picture. We could have had it loaded. But I open the door, and there is Kemp in half a flight suit, with half of that like blue hospital gurney that's like, you know, rough paper, right, that they give you, yeah, is around the back. He had that under his flight suit, his Ghostbuster sweatband pulled up on his arm because he had to have the logo on the arm. You, right, can't be in uniform and not have the logo on your arm. Just with the look of exhaustion of like, hey, where's my stuff?
Put it on the Western Kentucky Ghostbusters Facebook page.
I'll pull it
so
up.
We, yeah, can, we could, everybody can go head over there after the show or when you listen to it and find it there. But that's a great story. And you're right. It really does. You know, that does just kind of feel like the epitome of kind of the heart of what drives Why We Bust. You know, it's, there's something about this franchise that, and maybe is it, and you know, and I'm just, you know, and I'm looking for the answer. Is it the kind of pick yourself up by the bootstraps, made from, you know, found materials laying around that, you know, the original movie kind of is built upon? Is that And it doesn't even, the movie doesn't focus on that, but is it just that there's, if you watch it enough times, that kind of that spirit and do-it-yourself attitude just permeates?
It's got to be a part of it, right? I mean, there's, you can't, the people you talk to who do this hobby, they're all into the prop building, and even if they bought, you know, a HasLab pack, or they bought a prop, the first thing they're going to start doing is modding it.
Right.
You know, we can't leave well enough alone. We have to tinker and play with stuff. That seems to be kind of a common thread with every Ghostbuster I know, is we've got to play with it. We've got to tinker with it, mm-hmm, improve it, upgrade it. There's definitely that sense of...
Or in the post-afterlife world, we have to make this the dirtiest thing ever found, as if Ghostbusters have no idea how to maintain or equipment or store it indoors.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Very much. But I think the thing that always hit on me is, this is getting a little philosophical. Sorry if I get too far off in the weeds, but
we're here to pontificate.
The Ghostbusters are a family of found misfits, right? They're all weird in their own unique ways. And they, you know, fate, luck, karma brings them together. And that's what I've always latched onto with our Ghostbuster group is, we're all a bunch of nerds and geeks and dweebs, but we found each other. So we're not alone in this. We there's other people just like us. Mm-hmm. And we take those strangers and we make them not just friends, but family. And that's why I with all my heart, I refer to the team as my family in khaki. Mm-hmm. We at the drop of a hat will be there for each other no matter what. It all started with we like the same movie a lot, but it's become so much more than that. It's, you know, I've been, you know, in groomsmen in people's weddings because we let Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. It's crazy the things that the life will put in your way. But to me, that's always been really, I mean, there's a million reasons I could say why I love Ghostbusters and why I love this hobby, but really that's the thing that keeps me at it and keeps me going year after year after year is I love these people like family. Sure, we're raising money for the kids' hospital, and that's awesome. And it makes us all feel good. And it, gives us a reason to get new gear and to keep things updated and fresh every year, so people at conventions don't just say, "Oh yeah, we did that last year," and keep walking by. Like, it gives us an excuse to keep tinkering and getting new toys and bigger props and stuff like that. But really, it's I do it because I want to see my family. It's those events. There's a handful of events a year that we do every year, no matter what. And I know I'm going to see my people there. And that's, for me, that's what keeps me going. Cause it's not always easy. I joke and call it herding cats, but it can be difficult sometimes. You guys know it's the you start getting super popular and people want to hitch up to events and you don't want to say no to people, but at the same time, it's, I don't have anyone who's available to do that event that day because we still have families and work and lives and stuff. And we only have so much vacation time a year. So I hate to say no to people, but
it's a good spot to be in, at least. That's a good problem to have.
Yes.
On there. But we get that too. It's like, all right, this is one of our three or four events going on this day. Can we at least get three people to commit to this one so we don't have to say no? But it's we're a group of, where are we at? Are we above 50 these days, Norm, in Chicago? Or right around there?
No, I think we're more, quite a bit more than that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. We are a major population, hub here. For your group to be as large as it is, it's so impressive, the drawing power. That's there. And how much territory do you cover?
Well, I tell people we cover Kentucky, and really we only cover now anyway. This is a bit of a misnomer. We're called the Western Kentucky Ghostbusters because that's the name Kent picked out. That's where we started. Sure. But really nowadays we do a lot more events in Lexington.
Okay.
That's where I live. That's where most of the group lives. And to be honest, that's where a lot of the events happen. Lexington Comic Con is one of the biggest events in the state. Mm-hmm. That's, as the name would imply, in Lexington. Scarefest is a huge horror convention in September, October. Mm-hmm. That's also here in Lexington. So we'll do stuff outside of Lexington. Obviously, we'll travel. I think we've done some stuff out in Jessamine County, which is Nicholasville. We've done a few events out in Bowling Green. But we're fortunate enough now, some other newer groups have come around. Davies County Ghostbusters, those guys are awesome. There's, like I said, the Louisville Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. Every time I think they've kind of gone defunct, they'll pop up somewhere. So I can never count them out.
If anyone from Louisville Ghostbusters is listening, make sure you let us know. Give us a pulse check.
That being said, we'll do an event pretty much anywhere in Kentucky if I can find people who can make it. Mm-hmm. Going outside of Kentucky is a little more wishy-washy with me. That's the states we're around. There's already enough Ghostbuster groups in. Sure. The Tennessee Ghostbusters are awesome. There's a bunch of groups in Ohio. So I don't really feel that we need to go outside of our state. Right. If someone hits us up, I will happily, point them in the direction of a group closer to them. Cause I don't feel the need to try to cover, the entire tri-state area.
And but if anybody watching or listening is looking to do the same, we have whoyougonnacall.org is a great resource for you to understand who the nearest franchise is to a certain location.
Yes, please. It's an awesome resource. Jump on there and use it. It's awesome.
You got plenty to do in the Lexington area, and like you said, other groups can hit up folks on the outskirts there as well. And we've just got a minute or so left here, so John, I want to make sure we do a couple things. One, you have some events coming up. I want to make sure you get a chance to plug them. Could you kind of let us know what
your
group is up to here as we
start? So, 2 weeks, week and a half, March 6th to the 9th in Lexington, Kentucky is the Lexington Toy and Comic Convention. I'm pretty sure the biggest con in the state now. It's at the Lexington Convention Center. You can find us there all weekend, Thursday through Sunday. We'll be raising money for the UK Children's Hospital, doing our ghost hunt game. So come on out, find us, make a donation. We also have really cool badge swag this year. So if you're there last year and you got a cool little ribbon for your con badge for playing our game, we have all new ribbons this year.
Very cool.
And then after that in April, we'll be at the Lexicon Gaming Convention. Much smaller, more, you know, it's a little, you know, board game gaming convention, but we'll be out there doing the same thing. And then as of right now, I believe Scarefest in September will be the last event we have this year, but there's a lot that can change between now and then. But that's where you can find us immediately. Come check us out at LexCon. We can't wait to see everybody. It's our biggest fundraiser of the year, and it kicks the year off in a great way.
Come perfect. And everything is always updated over at the Western Kentucky Ghostbusters Facebook page, and as long as Meta keeps that up and running,
they don't cancel us again.
But real quick, the Windy City Ghostbusters will be at the Barrington Library on the 22nd here. Catch us there. We'll be there pretty much all day for the Fandom Fest going on in Barrington. And also on, it's just a library packed weekend. The 23rd will be at the Niles Library for their Fandom Fest. So head over to the Niles Main District Library. We will be there for the duration of that event as well. So check out the Windy City Ghostbusters there. And John, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you the final question here. Do you have a name for your proton pack?
Her name is Dinah.
Blow your horn.
And then the real Ghostbusters pack is Laurel. And if you can tell me the connection with Dinah and Laurel, I'll give you a dollar. It's a Green Arrow reference.
Oh, see, no.
Okay.
Did my mic cut out? I said Green Arrow. I apologize. So I'll send you my Venmo after that. Well, John, I can't thank you enough, and I want to make sure you know, reach out to us if there's any major events or things that you want to plug. You need to hop on for a minute or two to make sure that we can give you some time to address it. Just reach out, let us know. We're always happy to have you back, and can't thank you enough for all the years of service that you've given the community and the good name that you guys have and kind of, you know, help to keep the Ghostbusters in good standing in the general community. So I want to thank you guys for that. Thank you for talking about Ryan and kind of his legacy. And I just want to thank everybody for listening and watching. What another great week here on Why We Bust. I am going to be gone again, disappearing for another, maybe month or two here. So thank you for everyone for their patience as I take a bit of a leave with my new daughter coming here in the next week or so. And James, thank you for for keeping all the plates spinning for us. So everybody, thank you so much for joining us on Why We Bust. Go visit John and learn more about the Western Kentucky Ghostbusters on their Facebook page. And you can get all the Windy City Ghostbuster news and Why We Bust news. Well, I don't know. We're not on
Facebook. Well, we have a temporary page on Facebook. So, so feel free to search for Windy City us. GB.
Yeah, you can find us. You'll find us.
Windy City GB.com takes you to our link tree with all the important stuff. So
there you go. That works. Well, thank you everybody for joining. It was great to see everybody and great to talk to you. And I will, we'll see you soon. And we'll be back next week for another episode of Why We Bust.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Why We Bust. See you guys next time when we look at another Ghostbuster and find out what makes them tick.
Memoriam Development. Memoriam Development.